Mr. Mayor, thank you for taking the time to speak with me. I greatly appreciate it.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
And now, before we get into questions, what's your position at Holtec and what do you do?
Sure. I'm a program director at Holtec International, and I direct the High Store program in New Mexico, and I have one other project. I've been at Holtec for 3 years, and before that, I've served in the Navy, the submarine force, for 27 years, and during that time, I commanded two submarines.
Now, to give some background, your company, Holtec International, they're applying for a license from the Federal Nuclear Regulatory Commission to build a $2.4 billion consolidated interim storage facility in Lee County, New Mexico, between Hobbs and Carlsbad. Is that correct?
That is exactly right.
Perfect. Why does Holtec think that southeastern New Mexico is the appropriate location to store thousands of metric tons of spent uranium fuel?
Sure. Well, I think you realize that the previous administration had a Blue Ribbon Commission, and the Blue Ribbon Commission looked at how to handle spent nuclear fuel. I mean, there's spent nuclear fuel at 73 different facilities all over the country. And one of the recommendations was to build an interim storage facility. And it's for temporary storage of all the spent nuclear fuel. And the final disposition of that fuel will go to a deep repository, whether it's Yucca Mountain or something like Yucca Mountain. Well, when the Blue Ribbon Commission came out, the Eddie Lee Energy Alliance, our partners, put an RFP out. And they put it out to Holtec and two of our competitors. And after reviewing really our technology, which is the safest and most robust technology to store spent nuclear fuel licensed by the NRC, they approached us and they wanted to team with us. Why Southeast New Mexico? Well, it's a great place to store spent nuclear fuel because it's dry, it's remote, it's seismically stable, and there are other nuclear facilities in the area. So there is a nuclear trained workforce, a workforce that understands the technology. So that's kind of how we got to where we are now, and why Southeast New Mexico.
And so the waste would be stored in what Holtec is calling a high store facility. I'm guessing the high stands for Holtec International. Can you explain exactly what a high store facility is?
Yeah, I'd love to. It kind of focuses on our technology, and the technology is High Storm UMAX, and that is a below grade storage of spent nuclear fuel. So the easiest way to explain this is the spent nuclear fuel is stored in stainless steel canisters that are hermetically sealed, and they're filled with helium. So they're dry, hermetically sealed stainless steel canisters about 8 feet in diameter and about 20 feet long. Now, those are lowered into, and the easiest way to think about it is like a silo that's in the ground. And the silo is about 30 foot tall. It's 1-inch carbon steel, and it's a big cylinder that's in the ground. But what makes it robust is that it's surrounded with concrete. So there's all concrete around the sides of that cylinder. There's 3 feet of concrete under it, and there's 3 feet of concrete over it. And then you lower that stainless steel canister into that silo that's just below grade. So if you think about it, it's a stainless steel cylinder, hermetically sealed, in a carbon steel cylinder surrounded by concrete. And then on top of it is a lid. It weighs about 10 tons, and it's made of steel and concrete. So it's extremely safe. In fact, it could take a direct impact from an aircraft, a terrorist attack, tornado, hurricane, really any natural disaster. From a seismic perspective, this technology is licensed by the NRC to be installed on a fault line. And in fact, it's installed at the San Onofre Nuclear Generating Station, which is a very high seismic area. And it's licensed to be installed there, and it is being installed there. So it can be used in a high seismic area, but we're using it in southeast New Mexico, which is really a low seismic area, which makes it extremely safe. So that's how it's designed. One interesting fact about it is really how the fuel stays cooled. It needs no electric. It needs no water. In fact, it's done by natural circulation, kind of like a chimney effect. There are vents in the lid that allows air to go into the bottom, and that air gets warmed up by the stainless steel canister. And then it, as it gets warmer, it gets lighter, it rises and goes out of the center chimney, a very small chimney. So like a loss of electricity won't affect it. Loss of water, well, it doesn't use water. In fact, if water got in the vents, it actually helps thermal conductivity. So if you think about the technology, it's a silo in the ground surrounded by concrete with a concrete lid, and it's cooled by air through natural circulation. And that's the rundown of the technology that we're using.
Thank you for giving me an in-depth explanation of that. Regarding the actual configuration of the canisters, from my understanding, they are, the way they stick out, they're partially above ground. Is that correct?
Well, what's above ground is the lid. The actual canister itself is fully in that little silo in the ground. It's
completely submerged.
But we call it below grade. Yeah, it is. It's completely below grade. If you looked at the high storm UMAX, all you would see is the lid. You'd see about a foot and a half of a steel structure, which is filled with concrete, above grade. So you don't see the canister, and the canister, again, is surrounded by concrete.
And so what kind of testing actually goes into assuring the safety and the lifespan of these canisters?
Well, there's a few different, I guess you'd look at just the canisters from a static perspective installed in the high storm UMAX, and then you would look at the canisters from a transportation perspective. I know there's a lot of questions concerning transportation, so maybe I'll start there. There's four tests that a canister and a transportation cask have to pass. And these are regulated by the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. And if you think about it, the canister is loaded inside a cask, which is an overpack. So that whole, that whole apparatus has to pass four tests. It has to be dropped 30 feet. They attempt to impale it on a steel rod, and these are all sequential. Then they engulf it in flames for 30 minutes, and then they submerge it in water. And if you think about those tests in that order, it's from a transportation perspective, it could be a collision with an embankment, and that'll be the 30-foot drop. And then impaled on the steel rod, it could be debris on the side of the track or a part of the train. Engulfed in a flame, well, that could be a diesel fire. And then the submerged in water is when the first responders put the fire out. So that they're the tests that are set by the Nuclear Regulatory Commission that the transportation cask and the canister has to pass. Now, when you look at from a material perspective, the stainless steel cask itself is analyzed for corrosion and cracking, and there are specific tests that are performed to make sure that the corrosion does not form cracks, through wall cracks over the licensing period. One fact for our stainless steel casks, the life expectancy for our stainless steel casks is hundreds of years.
Hundreds.
The licensing period for hundreds of years. It's over 200 years. Now, our licensing period for high store It's going to be a 40-year license, and it could be increased in either 20 or 40-year increments.
And is that indefinitely? Can you keep renewing for a license?
You can. You definitely can. But the one thing to understand is when you put in for a license renewal, you have to prove to the NRC that you meet their requirements for aging management, that the fuel is going to save, the fuel will be safe for the next licensing period, which would be another 40 years. But again, our canisters have a life expectancy of hundreds of years. And again, interim storage, we expect if the facility is built in southeast New Mexico to last decades, because there has to be a deep repository. It would be shipped to southeast New Mexico, it would be stored there on an interim basis, and then it would be removed from there and go to the deep repository. And you would expect that to take a couple few decades to get a deep repository built and licensed.
One of the things that I would like more clarification on is regarding the license process. You did mention that your initial license is for 40 years and you can renew based on that. But how can a nuclear waste site that would last for 40 years or say 60 or 80 years or longer, how can that be considered a temporary site, an interim site? Let me let you answer that question because I have a follow-up to that.
Yeah, well, I guess interim would be anything less than permanent. And the fact of the matter is we understand, and if you look at the Blue Ribbon Commission report, interim storage is not in place of a deep repository because it's our country's policy and scientifically the deep repository is where we want to store the fuel permanently. That is the permanent answer. So interim storage is a way to safely and securely store the spent nuclear fuel until you open a repository and save the taxpayers, you know, $27 or $28 billion in liability that will be spent if it's not stored in an interim storage facility.
And my follow-up to that is, how would Holtec guarantee? I know that there's a process from the Nuclear Regulatory Commission that deals with this, but if you don't mind explaining it, how can Holtec guarantee that it would eventually move that waste to a permanent repository and not just abandon the site?
Well, we would never abandon the site. In fact, there's a decommissioning fund that we would pay into to make sure that there are always that there will be financial assurances that the fuel could be properly stored and handled correctly to a deep repository. So, I mean, there's no abandoning, and that's part of the NRC licensing. That number one, it would be safe and secure for the licensing period, and there are financial assurances to ensure that it's safe and secure. To guarantee that there'll be a deep repository, all I can say is that the nation's policy is that it will be stored in a deep repository. If you look at the Nuclear Waste Policy Act, I think it's 1982, that states that there will be a deep repository. And really, there's no one questioning that the fuel will go to a deep repository. Clearly, there's a question of where that repository is going to be. But there are assurances to make sure that the fuel will stay safe and secure and not become abandoned. And like you said, that's a kind of a lightning rod word. It would never become abandoned at the facility.
I guess what I mean by that is that, you know, in the case that something were to happen to the company, it goes bankrupt, there is still those financial assurances, as you said. That money has been set aside to ensure that there is the funding in place in order to relocate this nuclear waste. Is that what you're saying?
That is correct. That is correct. It's not only to relocate it, but it's to operate the facility and to greenfield the facility, once the canisters are moved from the interim storage facility to the deep repository, the facility will be dismantled. And that's part of the decommissioning fund. There's a fund set up for nuclear reactors around the country. Those facilities have a similar decommissioning fund, and it's required by law, required by the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, and we fall under a similar law.
Thank you for that clarification. Now, if your proposal is approved, the site, I just want to double check with you that the site would initially hold 5,000 metric tons of spent uranium fuel. Is that number correct? Because I know there have been a few floating around.
Yes, the site would, there are multiple phases, but the first phase is 500 canisters, and it's about 8,600 metric tons of spent fuel.
8,600, okay. And that eventually could go up to 100,000 metric tons after a series of planned expansions.
Exactly, 10,000, and it's planned expansion to 10,000 canisters. So 20 phases, 500 canisters each. And where these, where these numbers came from, we looked at the 500 came from, you know, right now there are nuclear reactors around the country that are shut down. And the only reason that those facilities are still there is to store the spent nuclear fuel. If the spent nuclear fuel was moved off the site, they would use their decommissioning fund and they would greenfield those facilities. So the 500 canisters, this phase one, ensures there's enough room to move all the spent nuclear fuel from the decommissioned or soon-to-be decommissioned reactors around the country. The 10,000 canisters, that's enough storage space for all the nuclear reactors in the United States to their end of life. So on an interim basis, you could store all the fuel from all the reactors in the United States to end of life before it goes to the deep repository.
There are already 34 similar interim storage sites. Why is there a need for another site to be built, and why at this scale? What's wrong with keeping the waste where it is right now?
No, that's a great question. And I'll tell you, Mike, that comes up, you know, all the time. The question is, why another one? Why here? I think I answered the why here. I could cover that again if you'd like. But why another one? Well, there are actually 73 different sites around the United States that store spent nuclear fuel on a much smaller scale. And as taxpayers, we're paying for the security, operations, and maintenance for each one of those facilities, for all 73. If you move it to an interim storage facility, you would consolidate that. You would consolidate the security, operations, and maintenance into one facility. And just as a, just from a financial standpoint, the federal government, because they did not open Yucca Mountain in 1999, therefore there's no deep repository and no place for all the utilities to store their spent nuclear fuel. The utilities have sued the federal government, and the federal government has paid $6.9 billion for these very small storage facilities around the country. Because since the federal government said they were going to build a deep repository to store the fuel and then didn't, it was a breach of contract. And then the utilities have spent, have sued and won to the tune of $6.9 billion. And there's an additional liability of about, I think it's about $27 billion. It's either $27 or $28 billion more for those individual facilities, 73 of them around the country. So the thought is that, that's a thought. The facts prove out that if you take those 73 sites and you consolidate those into one, it would be significantly less. And I'm trying to recall, Oak Ridge did a study on consolidated interim storage. And I think the number is, even if Yucca Mountain opened in 20 years, it would save the country around $20 billion using interim storage.
Let me rephrase this question.
Sure.
Are you saying that it makes more financial sense to consolidate the waste from these more than 70 nuclear sites, even though it's still going to be an interim storage facility? I mean, what is the point in collecting the waste from all across the country if it just has to be moved again eventually down the road someday?
Well, the fact of the matter, based on geology and seismology, that the deep repository is going to be somewhere in the southwest United States. That's why Yucca Mountain was selected. It was an excellent site for a deep repository.
Right.
And we believe there's going to be a deep repository somewhere in the area. So it will move most of the way to the deep repository if it's stored in southeast New Mexico. So moving it twice, really the only thing duplicative would be lowering it into the silo and then removing it from the silo, in the ground. It would still have to be transported by rail from the interim storage to the deep repository. That would be somewhere in the area.
Now, the public comment period recently ended, but there have been many people who have attended those meetings, those public comment meetings, and they voiced their concerns about having a nuclear waste site in the state. And there are some experts who have said that New Mexico doesn't have the infrastructure to transport the waste by rail and store it. But my question is, in your own words, what level of risk is involved in building a site like this?
In the actual construction?
In the sense of it existing.
Sure. The risk is, it's not measurable. It's so low. This is, again, it's an air-cooled canister that does not have any moving parts or needs no electric or water. It's in a concrete-cased carbon steel silo. It's a stainless steel hermetically sealed cylinder. It's natural disaster-proof, seismically strong, terrorist-proof. If you stood at the fence line for this facility, if you stood at the fence line for 24 hours, you'd receive 0.03 of a millirem. That's an unmeasurable amount of radiation. You get 360 millirem a year from background just by being around the Earth. So it's less than 0.03 of a millirem in 24 hours at the fence line of this facility. So there's no emissions from the facility. Radiation level, unmeasurable, and it's remarkably safe and secure. So the risk is, there's no risk to this.
Do you happen to have any examples of safety of other safety measures that Holtec would take in order to prepare for transporting and storing this level of waste safely and securely?
No, I'm happy. I'm really happy you brought that up, because I should have covered that forthright. Just from a, and understand that all the security at the site is designated in law by the NRC, 10 CFR 73, and it tells you what capabilities you have to have. The NRC also gives classified guidance on specifically what threats you have to protect about. Clearly, I can't discuss that here, but it's very detailed. But I will tell you that this site, I described the safety and security of the UMAX itself, but the site will have two fence lines, Constantine wire. It will have intrusion detection, closed circuit TV cameras. We will have a quick reaction force, an armed quick reaction force that will also be kind of dovetailed in to local first responders. It will have a very robust security system. And then again, there are certain capabilities that we'll have at the site that I can't discuss that will specifically address threats that the NRC said that we have to focus on.
And I have a related question regarding the safety. Your president, Holtec's president and CEO, Chris Singh, he has said there's a video on YouTube of him at a 2014 community engagement panel in San Juan Capistrano, California, where he said that he believes it's not practical to repair a canister if it were to be damaged. So I'm wondering, what is Holtec's current protocol for dealing with a radioactive leak? If something were to go bad, what measures would be put in place?
Sure. You know, I guess the way I would take that, I take that from a different perspective. We have an aging management program, and the aging management program is going to be able to measure the corrosion and any imperfections in the stainless steel canister, and we would detect imperfections before a through wall crack would occur. And we have to prove that to the NRC that we can do that. If for some reason there was an imperfection that we were concerned about, then we would simply remove the canister from the ground and we would put it in a second canister and hermetically seal that canister, if that makes sense. So our aging management system, as approved by the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, ensures that we detect imperfections in that stainless steel canister before a through wall crack occurs.
But nothing is foolproof, is it?
Nothing is foolproof. I would say that then you're saying that somehow there would be a through wall crack before we would detect it.
I'm just saying that mistakes do happen. I mean, there is a level of risk. I mean, it's just inherent to this type of work.
I would say that we will have radiation detection on site, and we would detect if something like that occurred. We don't expect that to happen. I mean, I would go back to you, Mike, and just say, well, how would that happen then? Rather than giving me an unbounded hypothetical, I say, okay, give me something based in fact where that happens, and then, you know, I could address that. It's hard to address the unbounded hypothetical. But I will tell you that we have an aging management system approved by the NRC, and we also have radiation detection around the site.
Have you had any sort of accidents occur with one of your canisters?
Accidents, no. Absolutely not. We haven't. Our canisters have never cracked or emitted radiation in any way. I mean, accident has a very specific definition. Absolutely not. None of our canisters have ever cracked or emitted anything.
Mr. Mayor, my last question for you. What's next for Holtec? What happens now that the comment period is over? What is the process for waiting to hear back from the Nuclear Regulatory Commission? What's next?
Sure. Now that the comment period's done, right now we're in adjudicatory period, and that's a period that any party could say that they think that there is something unlawful or not per the process, and they can file those complaints with the NRC. So we're in that process, and that's through September 14th. On a larger scale, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission is working on the draft environmental impact statement and a safety evaluation report. And they're really the two deliverables for the license. We expect this time next summer to get the draft EIS. And
EIS being environmental impact statement.
Impact statement, yes, Mike, exactly. And we expect that next summer, once that's publicly docketed, then there'll be another group of public scoping hearings, and the public will have the opportunity to say whether or not the environmental impact statement covers the right areas. Once that public hearing phase is done, or I should say scoping phase is done, then the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, we think sometime after the new year, that would be in 20, would then issue the license. It would be the safety evaluation report for the facility and the environmental impact statement. So we're looking at about a year, maybe a year and a half.
All right. Well, we'll keep our eyes open for an update. Thank you so much, Mr. Mayor, for taking the time out of your day to speak with me.
Hey, Mike, I appreciate you giving me the opportunity. Have a good day.
You as well. Thank you.